the buzzer. McCord on its way. Oh my goodness.
They have to get it in. No timeouts. They do. Florida
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, two incredibly intelligent, handsome former coaches talking basketball. I mean, actually, it's the world's greatest college basketball podcast, maybe the best podcast of any kind, quite honestly.
In the history of podcasts, this one has been voted number one.
I can understand that. Now, D-Square, we're going to get right to it in terms of getting some things out of the way. So we're going to do our obligatory Ohio State conversation and Junior because, I mean, it's, let's face it, the biggest game in the history of the Big Ten Network, some people say.
Purdue and Ohio State. Really?
I mean, that's what they say. I mean, they say that game is so big they might bring you in to be an honorary. Actually, you at one time were a Big Ten guy, network guy, I think.
I was.
How big a game is that in your mind in terms of validating Ohio State and what they are and also saying, wait a second, Purdue, Final Four, tough, all the things you've been saying about them, it's no joke, they're for real. What's your take?
I don't think with a 16-point win over Michigan State and five road wins in the Big Ten that Ohio State necessarily needs – validated. I think this is the first time in my son, actually, the obligatory junior shout out.
Exactly. Yep. Gotta have
he
it.
Told me that this is the first road game that they played in front of a frenzied Big Ten crowd, meaning they went to Iowa, the students weren't there, Rutgers doesn't have a whole lot, Northwestern's playing up by O'Hare Airport. They had some students, and it got loud a little bit, but nothing crazy. This is the first, you know, right there in the home smack dab. But I don't think Ohio State needs validity. I think Ohio State needs a win to get the tie break in the Big Ten tournament. I think that's big. I think Purdue needs a win to put themselves with a little separation in the Big Ten. I think it's a monster game. I think Mac will be crazy. I think that Ohio State must shoot the ball. They did not shoot the ball well against Illinois. At one point, they were 2-for-12 on threes, and I stopped counting and started praying, and they came back and won the game. But look, hey, you've said it. I've said it. There hasn't been a more consistent team all year than Purdue. They struggled last time out at Rutgers. Rutgers played them really well, and Rutgers played them a little bit like how Ohio State plays, kind of spread. Drove it, got the right guys, the right shots going to the rim. So it's going to be interesting, very interesting. I cannot wait. I am in Iowa City. I got to drive back. I actually have the Big Ten Network coming to the crib while I do my show so that they can do a little journey action on Andrew. And then, hey.
How about, wait a second. My man, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously. I mean, he went from oblivious to the
oblivion.
No, he was oblivious. No, he was oblivious. He sat on that bench. He was oblivious, not oblivion. I know the difference between
all
two.
All right. I didn't know if you did or not.
No,
supposed to now be offended that you called my son oblivious?
No.
My firstborn, fruit of my loins?
I mean, he was the guy on the bench that was just, like, leading the bench. Now he's like, he's got his own segment on the journey. I mean, think about that. And you're part of it. Basically, you are Andrew Dokic's dad.
I mean, proud to be. He used to be
your son, and he was a little embarrassed by it at times, I might add. But, I mean, now the roles have reversed.
I think that's unbelievable. Seth, I'm gonna give an obligatory junior proud dad alert. Proud dad alert. Coach Holtman, I was walking out with Andrew. I get the whole catastrophe at the game. I've got my wife, my ex-wife, ex-mother-in-law. We're all walking.
Got it all.
Yeah, I got the whole catastrophe, right? So Coach Holtman stops me, and he says, hey, Dan, I just got to tell you, man, the reason we play Andrew at the end of the game is because he has big, as Raph would say, onions. And, you know, as a dad – that that's the best compliment you can ever get. I'm sorry, it just is. Like, I would love to somebody at one point say that, you know, your son is so uber talented, he just doesn't play smart. I would love to hear that one time, how athletic, but I know that's not coming. But to hear that out of a coach is pretty cool. Very cool. So there you go.
That is huge, considering, if you think about it, considering he threw the ball to the wrong team at the end of the half. So now we know Purdue's really good. How about, were you surprised? West Virginia, Oklahoma, here's my take. Love Trae Young. Obviously spectacular. Does things that not very many people can do. I am getting a little tired of his shot selection. I got to be honest with you. I mean, like, 20 seconds left on the shot clock, pull up, shoot it from the logo, get that shot anytime. I did like what West Virginia did in terms of denying them the ball. I did like what Oklahoma did in terms of having someone else bring the ball up, advance the ball, then try to get him in the action. Is Oklahoma being exposed with their inability for those other guys to make plays? And is it hard because we, each and every game, I think we evaluate Trae Young, good Trae Young, bad Trae Young, shot it too much, didn't shoot it enough, trying to get other guys involved. How hard do you think, and I think it's hard, for a guy like that to find the balance, or I believe the balance has to come depending on the opponent, what people are doing defensively, and the game, time, and score. That's my gut.
Seth, I'm with you. Look, I don't think this is all Trae Young's fault. I think we – and I talked to Lon Kruger about this on my radio show the other day. I'm like, the thing that I loved about him was he was never a pig. I've talked about that. He got kids involved. And now it looks like – and this is so impossible not to. It's like, all right, I'm going to shoot it, and those guys become good enough to get you beat. You know what I mean? Now he got 32, but we got beat. Used to be he got – 38, but we won because he made passes. I think what we have put on Trae Young is impossible, because when he scores 17 as a freshman, which is a big number for most freshmen.
It's my career.
Me too. It's not good enough, right? This isn't good enough. This isn't, you know, he's got to do this. And look, let's also be honest. I think it's very difficult for anybody in college basketball this day and age to not get enamored with your own success. I just do. Trae Young, we talk about him, so now he becomes a target for everybody, whether it's Bob Huggins in West Virginia, whether it's Bruce Weber in Kansas State, Roy, Bill Self, doesn't matter, Seth. And also, he sees how well he's doing. He sees he only had 17. Well, he only did this. Well, he, honest to goodness, I don't blame him. I think, obviously, they watch a lot of film, according to Coach Kruger. I would think that there will be a discussion, and I think there will be a revamping. But, my God, is it hard. So hard if you're that kid at 18 years old. It's amazing.
Yeah, and every game to me dictates. And I'll tell you the other thing. I mean, that league will wear you down. Where we agree and disagree. I mean, I think that at times when West Virginia's making shots, see, I actually think – they're more engaged defensively. And I think Juwan Carter takes that more as a challenge to harass. And they ran multiple defenders at him. Then he's got Keenan Evans. Then he's got Devontae Graham. And then he's got, you go right down the league. About the only team in that league that can harass you, in my opinion, is probably Baylor. Everyone else in that league, and Iowa State to some extent, but everyone else in that league is wired to wear him down. I mean, it's a pure round robin. There are no rocking chair games in that league. And eventually it's going to catch up to you. Eventually people are going to have some type of blueprint to at least disrupt a little bit. And then I just think the kid tries too hard. I think he wants to win. The first half against Texas, I was surprised. Texas played him straight up, did a poor job in defensive transition. Ball was up the floor. He was dropping dimes. When he's dropping dimes, they're really good. When he's not dropping dimes, when you take away the assist, when you make those other guys playmakers, he's not as good because he's getting his, because he's going to be a volume shooter. And those other guys aren't as good because he makes them better. So I'm interested to see how this thing plays out, because everyone says, oh, player of the year, player of the year, player of the year. Then there's this little dude in Philadelphia. All right, Jalen Brunson, you need 30, he gets 30. He never turns it over. He throws it to the open man. He defends. He's tough. He leads. Yet he's playing off Broadway. I'm sorry, Big East fans, but when Villanova plays right now, it's not the same. Every time Trae Young plays on ESPN, it's an event, all right? And it's hyped as an event. When Jalen Brunson plays on the number one team in the country and the best player, it's not the same event. It might be an event in Philadelphia. It might be an event when they play at Butler. It might be an event when they go to Marquette. You know, just like they say, you know, the SEC, it's just different, whatever that thing is. I'll tell you what, it's just different when we're hyping up the Big 12, which is a great conference, and Trae Young. And I feel bad for Jalen Brunson because he's playing his way to player of the year, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with that at all. In fact, he might be the quietest player of the year. In fact, you might say to the average fan, Jalen Brunson, they might say, who's that? Oh, don't you remember he won a national championship? Don't you remember he's a lead guard? I did a game at Temple, and my God, I mean, the guy on the road, obviously, you know, the Big Five and all that stuff is huge, and he just shut everybody up within 5 minutes and was fantastic. I'm with you, Seth. I really, I'm going to tell you another guy. I'm going to go back to Ohio State. If you're talking about player of the year, and you're talking about Seth, I watched him drop 35 in a game that I think the second leading scorer had 11. The third leading, again, gratuitous Andrew Dawkins drop was 6. I mean, they're just, hey, this kid is doing everything, putting it on his back, and Seth, Brad Underwood said after the game, he goes, look, you got to understand, we held the ball out of Kata Bates-Diop's hand for about 8 minutes in the second half, and they did. So there are guys, I think, now that are helping their teams win, that are making their teams win, that are putting their teams on their back, like a Brunson, like a Kata Bates-Diop, that have to be looked at in the conversation. I really believe that. I don't think this is, and I'm going to say this, you know, during broadcast this week, this isn't anymore, hey, Trae Young is it, and everybody's fighting for second. Some of these dudes, and Brunson is definitely one of them, hey, it's about winning while you put up these numbers. It ain't about putting up numbers and then, oh, maybe winning. And these guys are winning and putting up numbers, Bates Diop and Jalen Brunson, no doubt about it.
You must have been watching Hoop Scoop last night because basketball Hoop Scoop. That's exactly what I said. I just said, when is winning going to come into the equation?
Yeah.
I mean, like, look, taking nothing away from Trae Young, but look, like, my guy Brunson, your guy Diop. I mean, those guys are winning at an elite level.
Yes.
And making winning plays. And I don't want to hear, well, you know, Jalen Brunson has Mikal Bridges and Dante DiVincenzo and Omari Spellman and, you know, Ohio State, you know, Jackson's playing well and, Jay Sean Tate is playing at a high level. So, I mean, I hear all that stuff, but you can't take away what these guys have been able to accomplish. Now, hey, you said something last week, and it'll be tested, obviously, on Saturday at 4 o'clock. Michigan State, you're saying, Michigan State just might be. You know, we talk about Duke being the most talented team, and I got to go on a little bit of tangent. I went and watched Duke St. John's, and obviously I have not much of a life, but I did. And that might be the worst ball screen defensive team I've ever seen in my life, and Wendell Carter might rotate back into plays, and they might tag rollers about as bad as any I've seen. So then I said, well, let me look at their zone possessions. And then I realized, their scheme is their scheme, but if you don't play hard, if you don't fight over screens, if you don't contest shots, if you don't make your opponent uncomfortable, I don't care what you're playing. They went 2-3 zone, it was awful. They went 1-3-1, it was awful. They went man-to-man, it was worse. So, like, everyone's talking about, you know, what's the best defense for Duke? You know, it's hard to play the two bigs and defend, but it starts with just competing. And defensively, that's St. John's game. I mean, like, I literally, it was the worst defensive performance in terms of being connected, recovering out of a ball screen, pressure on the ball, or even competing defensively. I mean, like, they were just one pass, two pass, throw it to the high post against the zone, boom, get wide open shot. Reverse it once, overload, swing it, run a guy through to the corner, screen to baseline, boom, wide open shot. It was pathetic. Can Duke be fixed defensively?
Well, everybody that you and I deal with on Twitter or wherever, play a zone. Okay. They played a zone. I mean, they play. I don't know. This team reminds me, and I just have heard that they don't like, you know, Grayson Allen. There's a divide there, all that kind of happy horse bleep.
All he does is throw the ball to the post. I mean, like, he's the only guy that feeds the post, catch it.
I agree.
Sweep it, get an angle, boop, throw it to the post.
This reminds me, and I said this on the air, and I won't stick with this. This reminds me of Duke with Jabari Parker. I thought Jabari Parker was the worst good player defensively I've ever seen in my life. And remember, I believe I'm right about this. Jabari Parker and those guys lost in the first round.
Yep.
And
Lehigh, right? The Mountain Hawks.
Yes. Mountain this Hawks. Is the same team. I honest to God, I see the same team out of Duke. I see, okay, Bagley's an all-world, blah, 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 blah. You've been talking about Carter. Okay, great. You know, when they win a game, usually Trent Jr. goes for 20-something and hits a bunch of shots. Okay, fine. All that is great. And they could finish the year as national champs. I mean, hell, they got that kind of talent. But we're talking about right now at this moment, Seth, I see the same team as I saw with Jabari Parker, disinterested defensively, interested in something other than being a, quote, Duke basketball player. Can it be fixed? Of course it can be fixed. There's enough talent there to fix anything. However, will it be if it's not a cohesive effort? I mean, we've seen before where it didn't get fixed, and I'm saying Jabari Parker, and this is what I'm seeing. So right now I'm going to say, no, it's not going to be fixed. This is some genius for you. Ready? It ain't going to be fixed until it's fixed. How about that?
Okay, Yogi.
Yeah, right.
I'll give you one. All right, so, like, you look at Duke, you look at Kansas, you look at Kentucky. All three have serious scars. Kentucky, when people get up and under them and physical with them, like Missouri did, they get pushed back. Tennessee did the same thing, get pushed back. All right? You got Kansas. All right? In their losses, people's two-point field goal percentage is a joke. They get crushed on the glass. They turned it over against Oklahoma State. They gave up 20 points in transition off of turnovers. All right? And then Duke. Which one of those do you think has the greatest chance to advance to the Elite Eight?
I didn't like Kansas when I did
like,
their game.
I don't like Kansas. Yeah. I think that their flaw in their front court is real if they're not making shots and they're not disrupting defensively. Duke, we talked about, and I think Kentucky could lose in the first round as easy as they could get to the Elite Eight.
You know, the thing about – here's the deal about the first round for a team like Kentucky. Chances are – I'm not going to say it's going to happen, but you're going to play against a hot team. You know what I mean? You're going to play against
they're
a team
They're going to be like an
up.
8 seed or a 7 seed.
Yeah, that's what – yeah. And eight, it's going to be – yeah. And I could see – all. I could see – wouldn't that be interesting, all three losing? The team that I would, I guess, put the most stock in, I feel like would be Kansas, and I'm not exactly sure, only because I think – I'm not even sure why. I see the flaws in all three. I think that Duke probably has the most talent. They played in big games. They've won some of them. But when I look at Duke and I see Grayson Allen as a senior going 1-for-7 in a game in the Garden, I say there's something wrong here. There just is.
So they don't give him the ball in transition. They miss him coming off screens. They have no point guard. You give me all you want about Trayvon Duell averaging 5 or 6 assists a game. They don't have a point guard, in my opinion, a point guard that could involve Grayson Allen. He's their best post feeder. He has the highest basketball IQ. If they don't get him involved, there's no way they can win national championship.
Seth, to me, it's not with Duke. They're going to score 90 points, right? Or, you know, most times. Obviously, they haven't done it a couple times lately. But so I don't want to – yeah, I'm with you. A point guard's going to get 6 assists. Or a guy dribbling's going to get 6 assists. Throw it ahead, go dunk the ball.
Throw it to rim.
Yeah, the point guard is so much more than that. Score, time, understanding, hey, the crowd's going crazy in the home or in the visiting arena. We got to settle this down. I mean, there's so much more to it. To me, you know, all three teams have real flaws. When I see Kentucky, I go, all right, big win, then you lose. Loss, play, Like, I don't see them overwhelming anybody. I'm going to be there Saturday for the game against Texas A&M, or I'm going to be in Texas A&M, and I'm really curious to make my own judgment on the court. Who looks more talented? You understand what I'm saying? Like, usually when you look at Kentucky, I don't care who it is, they are more talented. But I'm anxious to see, just watching warm-ups, watching the start of the game, okay, who is more talented, Texas A&M or Kentucky? And I'm betting I think it's Texas A&M.
Their front court is much more talented. It's not even close.
That's what I'm saying.
Not even close.
Yeah, right.
Not even close. I mean that's if Robert Williams. That's if Robert Williams plays the way he's hyped up to play. Because he hasn't done that. But you know what? Another team has a flaw? I'll tell you another team has a little issues. That's the Arizona Wildcats. Sean Miller absolutely blasted their lack of defensive commitment. And when we come back, you'll hear my conversation with the head Arizona basketball coach, Sean Miller.
I love sports. I just wish they could be with me always. They say you don't choose the app. The app chooses you. It is everything I could ever want in a sports companion. It can stream the games and shows that I love, and it's there whenever I need it. I never thought I could find an app that loves sports as much as I do. Until now.
Download the ESPN app to stream ESPN Radio and all the ESPN networks now.
I'd like to welcome in Arizona head basketball coach Sean Miller. Sean, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fine. Seth, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I hate making this doing this after a loss. It kind of kills me here. I know how miserable that is, but
that's okay.
Washington obviously playing pretty well. What? Just speaking about your team, what's been the biggest challenge coaching this basketball team?
You know, we're a much better offensive team. I would even say that we're a gifted offensive team, Seth. There's been very few even pockets in games, you know, through the 23 games that we've played or 24 games that we played now that we've had a problem scoring. But defensively, you know, is our challenge. And it's a challenge that I think we still have growth. I know we can get better. But it's something that, you know, in some ways I'm surprised we are where we are defensively. It's kind of that's Arizona basketball right now. I think if we can make some strides defensively, stay with where we're at on offense, then, you know, I think that we have a chance to really do some special things over the next month or so.
When you say defensively, I mean, is it, you know, again, your teams, when I think about your teams, I still remember that game we played in Puerto Rico. It was one of the all-time great rock fights. You had to knock a shot in from half court on me. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
It still haunts me. But
yeah, I could see that.
I'm bitter. Like when you say defensively, is it on the ball? Is it alertness off the ball? Is there an area where you say, you know what, I think we could be a great defensive team if we clean A up or B up?
Yeah, no, that's the thing. You know, I think statistically the two things that really jump at us, Seth, is we don't defend the three well. You know, we at times give too many open threes, and the percentages that teams have shot have at times been astronomical. Even, you know, Washington, that, you know, they don't necessarily beat you because of three-point shot. I think they finished maybe 8-for-16, 8-for-14, and, you know, sometimes it just happens, but over time, you really know that that's something that we have to get better at. And then, you know, equal, which is a bad combination, is our fouling. You know, we tend to foul more than the teams that we've had at Arizona. But, you know, I think that every coach right now, especially as the calendars change February, we know. There's no misinformation. I think that all of us know the things we do well and the things that we don't. And so much of it is going to be about, you know, learning lessons and what can we do to fix it. And sometimes I think it's personnel driven. You know, we have a number of guys off the bench that are young, and sometimes they hit their stride second half of conference play, and we're hoping that that'll be part of the solution.
Yeah, it's interesting you talk about February, because I think the dilemma for coaches is, like, February is still a time you got to work on yourself, but you're playing so many games and they're coming out fast and furious. How hard is it to balance working on your team in relation to preparing for that next game? I mean, how do you balance that?
You know, you're right. And I would also say the other part that now enters the equation is just staying fresh, you know, physically, mentally. You know, we have a couple guys on our team that have started and played a lot of minutes at this point. And, you know, practice is still very important, but, you know, making sure that those guys are ready to go on game night. You know, the Pac-12 thing that you love about our conference is it really represents the NCAA tournament from January all the way to March, you know, because we generally play that Thursday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday. Once in a while we'll have a longer swing, a Wednesday, Saturday, or Thursday, Sunday. But for the most part, you're always getting ready for two games in a week, not one. And I think the challenge, like you said, is to be ready for the opponent, keep getting better, and make sure that that we realize we've been at it a long time. I think we practiced about 75 times, plus we went on a foreign trip. You know, the last thing you want is you look out there and you see your guys can't finish games because we've overdone it.
How about you, just everything that's gone on, Sean? And I look, no one loves coaching more than you and your family. And with the way the season started and all that, how are you dealing with it? How's your family dealing with it? How's Arch and your pops dealing with all that? I mean, because that, all that stuff, the residual effect of that has got to be a little bit exhausting.
Yeah, no question. You know, I think the one thing you learn is if you control the things you can, and you know, you keep your focus on those things that mean the most. And you know, my focus has always been on this year's team to have the most successful season that we have. And you know, a lot of the questions you're asking me to have some answers. You know, what can we do to get better? Making sure that we're the most ready we can be. You know, this week, for example, is a big challenge. I think two of the most talented teams that we play all year, UCLA and SC, we got them both at home. So, you know, when you keep the focus on that, I think a lot of the other things take care of itself.
How often do you talk to Arch and your pop just about, you know, and you guys are like obviously connected at the hip and, you know, you helping him get through the transition, taking over a new job, and then obviously, you know, the captain of the whole ship, your pop, who probably is a great guy to bang stuff off of. How often do you guys get a chance to just talk and help each other?
You know, my parents, they just finished their stay out here in Arizona. For the most part, since we've come out here 9 years ago, they will come out for a month or a couple weeks, sometimes a little over a month during the season. It's great to have them out here. You know, my dad's out here. He's he's a grandfather first. I think he... Number two, enjoys the fact the sun's up, which is a little different than Western Pennsylvania at this time of year. But you know, he gives his input. He went on a trip to Stanford and Cal, and it's you know, it's great to have him around. It really is. It reminds me of why you coach, you know, why I got into coaching. And you know, it's something that you and I have talked about over the years, back to five-star basketball camp. You know, just you love the game. And if you weren't coaching college, you probably would be coaching high school. And you know, as you know, that's what my dad did. So it's always good to have him around and talk to him. And, you know, in terms of Arch, he's hit the ground running. I mean, obviously, Big Ten is a powerhouse conference, and he's got a big job ahead of him. So I just try to keep his spirits up. And when he loses, I probably don't hear from him as much.
I know that. It's like I watch him following my brother's team in Israel. I know he's lost when he doesn't post the results immediately after the game.
Yeah,
like I go on to Facebook, it's up, nothing up, oop, not good.
Yeah.
Hey, you got a special guy. I mean, you and I have been talking about this guy all season. DeAndre Ayton, have you ever been around a player like this?
I haven't, and I don't think many coaches have. You know, he's a once-in-a-generation type of player. Just the combination of how big he is, how physically strong he is at 19 years old, matched with just an uncanny skill level that really came out of nowhere. I mean, that's the thing that surprised me the most. You know, you look at him and you know what you're getting physically, and then all of a sudden you start to coach him and you recognize that he can pass, he can make free throws, he's got an unreal touch, 15 to 17 feet, and then laterally you watch him start to move as he learns defense, and it's just an uncanny really package of talented skills and talent, and I think it's unmatched. I really do. And you know, the last part is we're also really lucky because you don't know players until you're around them every day, as you know, Seth. And man, he's been a godsend. Everything that we've asked him to do, he's done. And I also think that's why he's improved. So he's very, very special. If people haven't seen him, it's well worth watching him down the stretch because there aren't many players, I don't believe, that have come to college that have been any better, especially in their first year.
Yeah, I know we get so caught up in Marvin Bagley, and he's a very good player, but I don't think people stay up to watch sometimes what your guy does. Because, I mean, you know, I watch him in those late-night games. I watch him on Synergy. And I tell you, if I'm an NBA general manager, I know his position. I mean, I know what he can do, and he has improved. Like, his ball screen defense has improved immeasurably. I mean, just in terms of his alertness and where he's taken a huge step forward, I think. And I'm not sure people appreciate how hard that jump is defensively, because I think the biggest jump guys have to make is from, not from the offensive end, but from the defensive end when they go up a level. Wouldn't you agree with that?
No doubt. You know, and I obviously I'm not Marvin's coach, but I'm familiar with Marvin. You know, him and DeAndre actually were on the same team briefly in high school. And I think Marvin has, you know, from what I see there watching Duke, you know, he has the same thing that DeAndre does, in that he's playing with another big, which I think for both of those guys is a gift for their future. You know, DeAndre, Seth, a lot of times he guards the other team's four, and this week will be maybe the biggest challenge of his career for us, and that he's going to guard a skill level at that position. It's almost like a guard at times. And then when we sub, then he shifts to a five-man, and in both cases of UCLA and SC, they're really good players. So the defense and what you ask him to do in 40 minutes, you know, you're asking him to sometimes switch ball screens, guard an elite three-point shooter, guard somebody who can really drive it, and then all of a sudden you guard a center who can score in the post or on the perimeter. And I really believe that DeAndre, he has embraced it, and I think it's going to be something that helps him when he leaves college.
Raleigh Alkins, what does he mean to your team?
He means everything. And, you know, in fairness to Raleigh, man, he's been through a lot with his foot injury. You know, he missed 11 weeks, then he started to work his way back. We had no problems, and it looked like he was going to just hit the ground running from start to finish. And then he started to experience some soreness, so we shut him down again. And I think where he's at right now is, you know, he's lost a lot of practice. He's going to be fine health-wise, but, you know, the other night against Washington, he wasn't at his best. And I can't help but think, man, just, you know, you start to cheat practice a little bit or keep a guy from there, it starts to work against him a little bit. So, you know, my hope is that patch is just about over, and he can experience good health, because it's his versatility in many ways that sets us apart. And he does a lot of different things. You know, I think he complements Alonzo Trier, and he complements DeAndre and the rest of our guys very well.
Yeah, I think he just brings an edge to your team. You know, he's got
And, you know, sometimes recently he hasn't had that edge as much, because, you know, I know where his mind is. He hopes he's okay. You know, he's conditioning-wise, you start to lose a little bit of it. But my hope is that he'll really be great down the stretch. And if his health is great, he'll be fine.
USC, as talented as, you know, just, again, just trying to educate people. I mean, I look at them, they got four pros maybe. I mean, as talented as team as they're, just in terms of talent. I mean, I watched him and I go, like, Boatwright, Metu, Elijah Stewart can get it going, Jordan McLaughlin. I mean, how potentially dangerous are they?
They're an excellent team. Andy Enfield has done a great job building that program, coaching them, and then, you know, obviously recruiting Southern California. But, you know, the two players that they have many, but who I think are really terrific is Chimezi Metu inside, is, in my mind, going to have a great career beyond college. And then Jordan McLaughlin, you know, he's that throwback player, and that he's not only an excellent point guard, but he's also a senior, somebody who's been there for 4 years. He runs the show, and you know, I think they're capable of beating any team in the country. They've proven that, but they're really good. The losses that they've had in our conference have been those one possession heartbreakers, and they're coming off of 6 wins in a row, so they're very good, and really ditto for UCLA. You know, Thomas Welsh, a lot like Jordan McLaughlin at the point guard, is an excellent center. I actually coached him a few summers ago on the under-19 Team USA, where he was a really good player for us then. But he can shoot the ball. He's 7 feet. I think he's second in the conference in rebounding. And then, you know, with him, they have a lot of other guys. But Aaron Holiday is someone else that, if you haven't watched play, you know, he has a couple older brothers that are in the NBA, and I think he'll certainly follow their footsteps.
Yeah, those two guys in a ball screen are hard to guard. When they're in ball screen together, those two guys are hard to guard.
I have a great confidence in telling you that when March comes, if you draw either of those two teams, you'll be mesmerized by the way they can score and their talent.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Sean, we really appreciate it, and just keep coaching your team, man. You can see how the light bulb's starting to go on, and the grind of February is upon you, and I know you'll keep on coaching. Tell your family I say send my best, and we'll look forward to seeing you down the road.
You got it, Seth.
We appreciate Sean Miller visiting with us. And you know what time it is? It's time for Pick'ems, which means Dan and I will help you select the correct team in the biggest games this weekend. Gabe, bring it, big boy.
All right, guys. Big matchup tomorrow down on Tobacco Road. Duke UNC, who you got?
I have a feeling that if you're going to bet this, bet the over. It might be 172 to 168. I'm going to go with Duke. I'd like Carolina a lot. I did a game there first time ever. I love everything about Carolina. I really do. I like the colors. But I'm
going to
go with
colors.
Duke. Yeah, I saw Carolina play so well in New Orleans against Ohio State. I thought they were terrific. And I talked to John B. or my son talked to John Beilein. He's like, yeah, it's the best team we play. But I don't see that same Carolina. Obviously, I don't see the same Duke team. I'm going to go, 199.5. I'm going to say Duke wins on the road.
I got to believe Duke could win. Here's my concern. All right, in their losses, guards have actually torched them. Can Joel Berry torch them? Second question is, if they play man, those two bigs, Cameron Johnson and Luke May, they're going to be all over the place in the action. Will the two bigs for Duke be able to chase them around? Having said that, I can't imagine Duke not winning this game because just count the pros.
Count the pros against St. John's.
Ooh. Okay, next game.
All right, another big game. Same day, UCLA, Arizona out west.
Oh, I'm going with Arizona. I think Arizona. Look, you want to talk about count the pros? I'll count the pros in Arizona. It's the same exact reason I'm giving you why I picked Duke, because I know Alford and Sean Miller detest each other, right? I mean, Steve's never told me that, but I know. And I just got to believe that when you just match him up, Ayton, God, is he
good.
Or should be good. I know. And
he's
got to
be in a conversation for player of the year, I'm just telling you.
And you know what, Seth? It's the same reason that in my feeble little brain that I picked Duke, because I'm thinking Bagley, and I'm thinking the bigs for North Carolina. I think, Cam Johnson, Luke May, what are they going to do with Bagley? And, you throw those three kids out there. I'm going to go with Arizona. But I'm not sure. I'm going to go with Arizona because I don't trust UCLA right now. Let's put it that way. And too much talent.
Yeah, Welch and Holiday could give him a little bit of problems in those ball screens because Welch pops, and it seems like every time he shoots it, he's going to make it. But I like Holiday a lot. He's good. I think Arizona's really good offensively. I think they'll figure it out defensively. And, there's not a real buzz going around UCLA. They had a good win against USC the other day, which is a good win, especially with everything that's going on. But I'm going to go with Arizona. What do you got, Gabe?
All right, on Saturday, big-time matchup in the Big Ten. The Boilermakers head to East Lansing to face off Michigan State. Who you got?
Who you got, Seth?
I'm going to go with Sparty at home. I think Sparty at home, it's a celebration of Coach Heathcote. They're going to have about 400 former players in attendance. I was at the game a couple years back when they had that game against Maryland. Maryland was playing really well. I think the energy in that building is going to be incredible. I think for the first time in a long time, everyone will be pulling in the same direction. I think that Michigan State's defense is built to be able to bang with Purdue. I think the one matchup that concerns me defensively is Bridges on, whomever, whether it's Dakota Mathias or he plays at four and Vince Edwards. I just have a feeling at home Michigan State has to win this game.
I agree with that to an extent. Here's my problem with Sparty. I did the game last week, and Indiana, and I'm being literal here, shot 2 for their first 22, 6 for their first 35. And had a chance to win the game at the end. And that stunned me. And as I was getting ready for the game against Iowa, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, I love Michigan State's team. Man, I think they're national championships. Man, I think they've got a monster front court. Man, I love Jaren Jackson and all that. And then I think, wait a second, Indiana's really bad and played really bad and had a chance to win. I thought that Breslin Center second half against Penn State was back to being the Breslin Center that we all know and really enjoy. I'm going to take Michigan State, but there's a lot before that game. I'm going to take them for really the reasons you say. In the Big Ten, sometimes the arena and your history wins games. I saw it for years coaching and playing in Assembly Hall, and I'll say that's the reason why. But damn, do I like Sparty as a team. But damn, am I questioning them after how bad Indiana played. Indiana still had a chance against them. But I'll take Sparty because it's home.
All right, last one, Gaber.
Last one real quick. The Kings of the West Coast Conference, Gonzaga and St. Mary's. Who you got?
It's at St. Mary's. Payback game. You know what they say about payback game? The only thing worse than payback game is double revenge.
Oh, God.
St. Mary's.
Revenge.
Jock Landale is a tough matchup. Hermanson, tough matchup. Emmett Nahr, tough matchup. I'll go Gonzaga.
Me too. Everybody's a tough matchup, but Gonzaga. Hey, look, what did Ric Flair say? To be the champ, you got to beat the champ. Well, I think Gonzaga is a champ, and I did it again. This is just me, Seth, so forgive me. But I did a St. Mary's game last year, 2 years ago, whenever it was, when everybody was whining that they should have been in the NCAA tournament. Jock Landale was there and all those guys, and I thought, are you kidding me? This team would finish 12th in the Big Ten. So I'm not buying. I am buying Gonzaga. I think Gonzaga wins. But Josh Perkins can't be a front runner. He's got to play the whole time.
Yeah, that's my concern with Gonzaga. I'm not sure Silas Melson and Josh Perkins, I'm just not sold on those two guys. I think that Perkins can make a shot. That's great. But yeah. If he's not making shots, then he's not doing the other things. And at times
that's
they turn
I'm
it
saying.
Over. But
I'm saying. You can't be a front runner because you're making shots and all of a sudden I'm going to play defense. What if you're not making shots? You're not going to play defense? You're not going to concentrate with the ball? What? So I'm with you, brother.
All right. Where are you this weekend?
I am in Texas. I got Vitaled, so I'm in Texas watching Texas A&M take on the Cats of Kentucky. I can't wait.
Ooh,
you guys
game,
are
though.
Where?
Good game.
Yeah, really
though.
Good game.
Good game.
Yeah, great game.
I like the way you said you got Vitaled. I'm happy you didn't say the other thing.
Yes, I am. Yes.
Exactly. All right. All right, D-Squared. Have a great week. We'll touch base with you. Wish Junior luck. Big game. Big game.
Oh, yeah. Monster. I'll be there. Look for me in a Cubs hat behind the Ohio State bench.
You got it.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcast.